for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Welcome to another week of Leologos Radio, the radio program which bridges the global Greek community and which is heard on 25 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Dr. Michael Nevradakis, and today is our final English language broadcast of the 2018-2019 broadcast season, a broadcast which is packed with content. And we'll begin today's program with part 2 of our extended interview with journalist and analyst Dimitris Yiannopoulos, discussing the aftermath of the European, regional, and local elections in Greece, the forthcoming national elections, the return of Yanis Varoufakis, for whom he once served as his press aide, to the political forefront, and the national security threats Greece is facing going forward. This politically oriented interview will then give way to our final interview of the broadcast season, featuring 19-year-old Greek-American Despina Kotsis, who is taking the world of fashion by storm, and who also recently had the opportunity to travel to Greece for the first time. We'll hear about her clothing line, how she got into fashion, her impressions of Greece, how Greek culture impacts her work, and much more. So with that, we'll get started with part 2 of our interview with journalist and analyst Dimitris Yiannopoulos, who joined us from Athens, here on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series. The Leologos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Leologos Radio. We're speaking with journalist and analyst Dimitris Yiannopoulos here on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series. And Dimitri, here, of course, I will add Greece's other national issues, which must be taken into account from a geopolitical standpoint. There are the developments in Albania. There are the fears that many have that there are not just plans, but actions in the works for the formation of a so-called Greater Albania. There's the Thrace region as well. What is your take on all of this?
That is an important point. Thrace, we have to note that in Thrace, Thrace was the only department or prefecture, Thrace and Komotini, where Turkish parties won the local vote. And in fact, Singular had painted the picture of a blue or bluish or turquoise, it was symbolic, turquoise color. Greece, you know, the results of the local elections, and Thrace being shaded yellow. But then, because there was the yellow color is linked to Constantinople, you know, the yellow, they changed that in the picture that they send off to the media, to the internet websites the next day. They changed that into gray. But it was very noticeable. It was the first time that the Turkish contingent within Thrace, which is effectively setting aside the Lausanne Treaty, because Thrace was supposed to be strictly an Islam minority, a Muslim minority, with no Turkish national presence, because that was part of the agreement or exchange of populations, you know, but every part of that Lausanne Treaty, except in name, has been overturned by the Turks, you know, in Constantinople, in Imbros and Tenedos, and of course in Thrace, of course with the cooperation of the Greek elites and the Greek political establishment, because they allowed the free reign of the Turkish consulate in Komotini, right? Which has managed to force Muslim populations like the Pomaks, were against any idea of a Turkish identity, right? They forced them to become Turkish. They introduced the Turkish language into two language schools. And now we have this situation where it's not Tsipras, who may have agreed all these developments with Erdogan in the past couple of years, but it's Kyriakos Mitsotakis, a new democracy, or rather Kyriakos Mitsotakis himself, who has first legitimized the Turkish language becoming the main language in the dual language schools. And also, and this is very important, out of the blue, he proposed a Muslim council to the prime minister's office, which is effectively, because he announced that in Thrace, it's effectively a cohabitation with the Turkish contingent. You have for the first time a prospective prime minister saying that I will have in my office in May, in Maximus House, I will have a council on Muslim affairs, which is basically Turkish affairs, as far as Thrace is concerned, to say nothing about the illegal migrant Muslim population, who God knows what they are capable of doing, right? I mean, ISIS, even ISIS terrorists have been arrested or shadowed in the rest of in Europe, I think, you know, Germany or France, ISIS militants coming from Greece. Now you can imagine all the hundreds of thousands of Muslims that have entered Greece over the past 5 or 6 or 10 years, you know, being under the leadership not only of the Turkish human traffickers, which is basically what they are, right? Because they were also the same Turkish traffickers who were in cahoots with the Italian mafia in Italy. That was revealed by Salvini. They were taking control even of the illegal migrants from Libya. They were ISIS-filtered, ISIS-led militants and so-called refugees, right? All of them of weapons-carrying age, all of them well-supplied with expensive smartphones, with credit cards are filled 500 euros per month non-stop from mainly the Soros, but also all the other shady banking and finance currents that are pushing this national replacement agenda. So Mitsotakis was doing his utmost to say that, please, I'm all for a peaceful takeover of the country by Turkey. Don't, no war. Please, no war. It's kind of a servile, knee-bending, docile position. But he is, of course, not taking into account the actual plans which the globalists have in Greece, which was to crush probably the strongest and most cohesive nationalist cultural foundation. This is really the secret, because even today, after all these defeats, after hundreds and thousands of years, really, of takeover by hostile empires and neighbors and invasions, the communist takeover bid, civil war and all that, still, Greece has got the most cohesive nationalist spirit in Europe. This is reflected in the Eurobarometer polls with something like 70 to 80% Euroscepticism, distrust for every government, every Greek government that's come to power in the recent years, distrust for the state and its policies, and a very negative expectation of how the economy or how the government is going to fare in the next elections or in the future, etc. The people know that they are under occupation by an internal occupation regime. And the globalists know that. They don't care, no matter how servile, docile, no matter how much they are given away by Syriza or New Democracy, by Tsipras or Kyriakos Mitsotakis, their aim is to crush this current, because they know that compared to even Italy, I mean, Italy, it's estimated that this what is in Greece, 70 to 80%, in Italy it's at most 45%. In Germany, it's still less than 20%. In France, it's, let's say, 30%. Nowhere do you have this cohesive nationalist sentiment, which is actually a tribal nationalism, one that goes very far. Whereas all these Western countries that are now, have been powerful and now are, except for the globalist slaughterhouse, right? I mean, they still don't understand. And that's why globalists have been so successful in these countries, because they don't understand what does it mean to be German. Of course, the Germans, okay, they have been educated for the past, since the Second World War, that there's no Germany, there shouldn't be a Germany. It's only Europe. But in France, in Italy, in Sweden, right, in the Scandinavian countries, in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal, etc., everywhere, the reaction to the globalist plans is weak, even though the political system is far more open and flexible to accommodate such a current that is completely illegal in Greece, completely illegal in the ideological, in the institutional and communication sense. Not in the sense that in any legal sense. Of course, they are free, but, you know, I mean, they are all under the control. A very, very small percentage of the Greek electorate can actually make a difference. We have seen it here and there in the local elections already. Certain surprise results, like the mayoral candidate of New Democracy in Thessaloniki. There were two. One was a extreme anti-nationalist, who was the official candidate for New Democracy, and then another candidate, Zervas, who won by 70%, a landslide, who was both more independent and had expressed himself in favor of, rather against the Macedonia sellout with Prespas. So I am very much afraid that this system is not going to avoid a national crisis, a national threat. And that's why people like Varoufakis is a secure pawn in this game. I mean, even more than Kyriakos Mitsotakis. Because Kyriakos Mitsotakis has to contend with a nationalist element which has the distrust of European globalists, Germany, etc. Whereas Varoufakis is now overplaying his own anti-nationalist sentiments. He wasn't like that in 2015. In 2015, he even supported Kamenos when Kamenos said that, you know, we would rather explode everything, you know, let everything become a cookie, as he said, you know, rather than vote for a new memorandum or the extension of the existing memorandum, which, of course, Varoufakis had signed only secretly. And the final interesting point is that you have a reversal of the two roles. I believe that the key point in the relation between Tsipras and Varoufakis was the night of the so-called referendum reversal, where Varoufakis resigned, and Tsipras went on to agree a total compromise. In fact, I think that both of them agreed secretly that Tsipras would go on, sign off the third and most extreme disastrous Troika memorandum, but Varoufakis would be the only one that could have blocked this process, right? By simply saying, you know, right, we fight Tsipras. I call everybody, Laë, etc., to block Tsipras in parliament and in the next elections. Tsipras would have lost, but at that night, both of them revealed their true faces. Tsipras had agreed to Merkel's offer of a longest serving memorandum leftist prime minister in Greek history, right? And Varoufakis to become the sort of hero, defeated hero, right? Because he says he titles his book Memoir, the Greek title of his memoir. The English title was The Adults in the Room, whereas his Greek title was Unvanquished, defeated, or how would you translate it? Aedidid men. Defeated, but yet anyway, you can find that in the dictionary, where, you know, there is a better term. And this is the kind of role which Varoufakis became, a kind of a, you know, he was brought into a glorious exile. He was allowed to leave the scene as without being tarnished by the events which he has helped create, even more than Tsipras, the collapse of the Greek economy in 2015, the summer of 2015, the closure of the banks and all this catastrophe that followed. So he was allowed to disappear from the Greek political scene without being tarnished with the responsibility. Of course, a lot of people accused him of being responsible, and even Kyriakos Mitsotakis saying, oh, we're going to take him to court and all that for allegedly wanting to get out of Greece. Whereas, as I have shown, admittedly without any success, because I faced a wall of contrived indifference by the mainstream media, all of the mainstream media agreed with me. You know, I could even name some major international media pundits as well as local media stars that had privately told me that if ever there was a trial, if ever these things that Varoufakis and Tsipras did behind the scenes, signing off both the extension of the second memorandum Samaras for another 4 months, and the measures, the prior actions of this memorandum, right? Two separate signatures which Varoufakis had signed secretly. First, the contract, the extension that should have passed from Parliament, the extension of the Samaras memorandum in 2012 for another 4 months, and the measures, the so-called prior actions, which he was supposed to negotiate with the Troika. He has signed off on them too. You see, this is the big secret, which he effectively reveals in his book. There's no doubt about that. I'm not talking out of my head, right? And everybody, when I wrote that article in Epikera, everybody in the Greek media agreed with me. But when I told them, okay, let me confront Varoufakis on his lies, because there are extreme lies in the book, in his behavior and everything. He's a pathological liar. Well, you know, let's wait and see, etc. But now they're turning to me when I told them, you know, here, that's the result. You have created a kind of Frankenstein monster, which is Varoufakis effectively playing the role of a globalist puppet. And they said to me, well, Varoufakis has proven himself among us, you know, whatever the American expression, that would be, you know, somebody with balls or whatever, you know, among us. And it's true. I believe that Varoufakis has really unfolded his talent. He's, as most of the sociopathic narcissists are, very intelligent. very manipulative, very capable of handling his public image. But as I have also witnessed firsthand behind the scenes, when he's outside the limelight, he reveals his insecurities, for he knows that he is really playing a game that he does not reflect his real position. But he has gradually become so cynical in playing this game and seeing that he's so successful in this game that really there's no limit to the power that he will gain. Of course, I will always tell people that they shouldn't believe that Varoufakis is capable of uniting anybody behind him. He will be as intolerant and as arrogant towards any other person around him as he is in front of the media, only this time not playing the role of the rebel, the great reformer of Europe, etc., etc., but somebody who says, you know, you are nothing compared to me. Because that's his attitude to all his colleagues that have trusted him, because all of them have abandoned him. And I'm sure that the people who have followed him, like Sakorafa, in these elections, people who have some name for themselves, not the others, because the others are nameless. He's got a party of nobodies. This is no accident. Any of them, do you know any one member of his DM party or Mera party, the name of any one of them?
I think his wife.
Even his wife, if you ask her, she will have to say something. She does have a problem with behavior, but he has not allowed any other person that has cooperated with him politically to come anywhere near his own pedestal in the mainstream media. And all the mainstream media, especially in Greece now, the two main big parties, which is Alafouzos and Marinakis, are all open, push him into as high a position as possible because they know that he's also somebody who can be controlled and manipulated like a puppet on a string. This is the tragedy of the Greek political establishment, which is, over the years, has managed to be so flexible in becoming estranged from the real popular sentiment and the interests of the Greek people. But I always look to the positive side, because this estrangement of the Greek state and the political system from the people has kept the people determined to find that opportunity where it will manage to liberate itself. It may take tens of years, or hundreds of years, hopefully not hundreds of years, this time around, but I believe that this system is going to collapse at some stage. Probably around 2022, it will be a turning point after the next presidential election. Of course, there's going to be a crisis in 2021, right? Which is 200 years from the Greek Revolution, right? And that's why I believe that this system cannot last indefinitely. Either the Turks are going to take everything over, or the system has collapsed and Turkey will have to face a more independent partner in Greece, not this doormat.
We're speaking with Dimitris Yiannopoulos, journalist and analyst, joining us from Athens here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Dimitri, we're getting close to the end of the interview, but very quickly, I wanted to get your insights and your thoughts as to the role that various, supposedly at least, patriotic organizations within the Greek sphere, inside and outside of Greece, have played on various issues, such as the Macedonia issue. You've commented elsewhere on these organizations, some of these pan-Macedonian groups, for instance, but also certain journalists, certain academics, about the not very clean or very transparent role that they have played on the Macedonian issue and on other national issues.
I've always said from the beginning that since the first of the three major rallies for Macedonia, December 2017, I said that this is the real expression of a spontaneous response, very responsible, very solid, and not at all extreme, but it's still some response that rejects one thing and one thing only, an attempt to put it within a straitjacket of some party or other, to put some leader on top of it. It needs to be expanded, to be reproduced in different ways, to be reflected and expressed locally in grassroots organizations, because really this is the ancient community spirit which has characterized Greek democracy of the Greek city-states, and then became the kinotites, the communities during the Byzantine Empire, and even during the Turkish occupation. This is a primordial spirit that characterizes the Greek national sentiment, which is probably more democratic than any other country, because really the democracy that came out of, the British liberalism, is a liberalism that focuses on the individual, one party, one vote, or one citizen, one vote, whereas the Greek system of democracy that can be traced to Aristotle, Plato, and the others, said that in order to have a proper democratic system of the people, first, you have to have a sovereignty of the community which takes part in this political system, and then sovereignty of the individual. You can't have a sovereignty of the individual like classical liberalism without having a sovereignty of the nation or the community or the tribe or the local council that is situated within specific geographical area and always relates to ancestors, to an ancestry that is Greek, that is carrying over the traditions, etc. So I believe that when this spontaneous spirit re-emerged in 2017, the way it also emerged in 1992 and in other instances, I said, please don't try to take it over. Don't try to throw an umbrella or a wet blanket or some kind of a straitjacket of your political ambitions on this guy, because it's going to spew you out. It's going to spit you out like a piece of kernel. And that's what they did. You see, both the international Macedonian organizations and certain political person, not political person, but anyway, certain activists is the right term, who thought that because they have put out the right slogans or carried the sound equipment of the rally on their back or organized the whole thing in terms of publicity and participants and setting the stage, that they were also the people who were representing this current. They were not. And if they wanted to become, they have to prove it. How? By telling these people, now it's your turn. Now it's your, we have this rally, let's continue at every local level. Let's have 1,000 more local rallies. Let's have the people break away from the chains of the existing institutions. That would be the way to proceed. But they didn't do that. The system was very clever. Some of those people, because I used to talk to most of them, they thought that elections would happen before the passing of the Prespas agreement. Because they said that Tsipras will not take that responsibility. He will first have elections and then force himself and Kyriakos take joint responsibility. But no, the system said, first we sign the agreement, we break the spirit of the people, then we have the elections, because they had already done this experiment in 2015, right? From July to September, it was a mystery. How did Tsipras, who did all this disaster, I mean, suddenly win the election of September, the same percentage as in January 15. So they said, we're going to hold elections after the signing by Tsipras. Why? Because we also have more plans. Now that we are on the slippery slope of the Macedonian betrayal, the next national dismemberment of Greece has to follow. And in order to follow, let's stabilize, let's cast these Prespa Macedonia sellout agreement in stone and then proceed to the next stage. I mean, these guys that were supporting the rallies, and they didn't know that. They thought that, oh, you know, they could keep using the pro-Macedonia slogans in order to gain ascendancy within the political system, and thinking that they would win the elections and thereby prevent the next government that would be elected to sign off on the Prespa agreement. I mean, it was completely out of touch. And when the signing happened, they didn't take their lesson. They even put out this ridiculous slogan of for a referendum on the Prespa agreement, a referendum on something that is totally illegitimate in the constitutional sense, the national sense, every sense. You know, you can't have, even if 90% of the people, by some negative miracle, voted for that, it would still be illegal, it would still be a high treason, it would still be a sellout of your own, the most glorious tradition. I mean, the notion of Hellenism as an ecumenical or a global cultural thing is directly linked to Alexander the Great and the Hellenistic Age. The Hellenistic Age is the kind of civilization that Alexander the Great established throughout the known world there. And it has nothing to do with it. It's not the Golden Age of Pericles that was a global civilization. That was the beginning. But the real global civilization of Hellenism was Alexander the Great. Now you're selling this out. You're selling the name and the history and the culture of Alexander the Great, his epigons, and the later struggles for the liberation of Macedonia from Turkish rule. You're selling this out to a Frankenstein statelet, something that can be a pawn of this and that power, or whatever it wants you choose. So they put out this slogan in the last rally, instead of again saying that our struggle must continue, as a lot of people did spontaneously, throughout Greece, right? Nobody, no ikshot of the government was allowed to go there. They booed them and they heckled them. But this spontaneous reaction had to be a little bit organized. It had to be legitimized. It had to be to have some self-understanding, self-acknowledgement of its own importance, right? That yes, you are autonomous, you are not yet ready to enter this system, because this system is a complete wall. It is walled out of Greek society. But gradually, its leaders, a new generation of leaders could arise out of it. Both the international homogenia, expatriate organizations of the Macedonians, and these few so-called protagonists of the rallies, they thought that it was sufficient for them to appear as the patrons of the rallies, and they think that they will. And now I'm asking, first of all, of course, the protagonists have been wiped out of the elections in Macedonia and Greece, and the so-called expatriate Macedonian, pan-Macedonian, international, global Macedonian organizations are left without a role. Because instead of saying that we continue the struggle in order to overturn the PRESPA agreement in practice, in its repercussions within the Greek institutional scene, as well as internationally as an illegal agreement, they are saying, oh, well, you know, we hope the government, the next government will oppose this agreement or cancel this agreement or etc. And we'll hold the referendum that wasn't held before that. I mean, they're completely out of touch with the primary goal, which is really to cultivate and to foster this fledgling Greek independence spirit. Because that's how the Greek Revolution happened in 1821, right? It was primarily spontaneous. There was, of course, a friendly society that was trying to organize it, but even the friendly society thought that it could do that from outside, from Pravia, and going straight into Constantinople. Whereas the Greek people started their revolt from the Peloponnese, where the oppression of the Greeks was more extreme. The same way the new nationalist sentiment here happened at the time when the worst kind of humiliating betrayal was undertaken by the existing political establishment. These are kinds of lessons that people refuse to take seriously. And thinking about it, why don't people who are politically far more eloquent and publicly known than myself, don't think of these things? And I'm beginning to think that the only reason is that I still can think independently. Why? Because I chose consciously to go into retirement professionally in order to practice what I preach, in order to be able to liberate my mind and follow developments independent of any media boss that would tell me, you know, okay, give me this report, send me this report, let me make you a big website, you know, to become a big journalist yourself and all that. No, I didn't want that. I wanted to understand what's going on in Greece and tell the truth. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act under these circumstances. And it's the last thing I want to do in my life. I had 30 years of journalist experience in the past, in which I felt completely oppressed by a system of media that was preventing me from thinking these things through. So I hope that other people will follow suit in these ideas, like yourself and whoever else, because I believe that that's the only source of hope that we have. And don't consider the overwhelming publicity that mainstream discourse has at the moment, but don't think that it's going to last forever. Whenever you talk to a people on the street, I have no problem convincing. The people are far ahead of the political establishment. And they show this with a very reserved, systemic or conventional voting pattern, which hides a resentment and a determination that next time we're going to get you. And the next time is going to be soon. Because the crisis will not end with a Macedonian sellout. It's going to be a Aegean sellout, it's going to be a Cyprus sellout, and it's going to be a Thrace sellout. I'm leaving. You mentioned Albania. I don't consider Albania to be a worthy threat. We see that their government is already in crisis. They won't. But Turkey is a real political superpower. And it's probably the leader and the motor force of this system of population replacement in Europe. Right? It's the organizing force, the human traffickers, the mafia warlords, the secret agencies that cooperate with all this Soros. So, I mean, Turkey is a force to be reckoned with.
Dimitri, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today and for sharing your insights and your analysis with our listeners.
Well, thank you very much, and let's hope that what we said here are going to be further elaborated following the results of the coming national election.
It'll be our pleasure. Thanks again. We just wrapped up the second and final part of our interview with journalist and analyst Dimitris Yiannopoulos here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And you can find the audio of this interview online at dialogosmedia.org, on our podcast, which is available in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com, and also now on Google Podcasts and on Amazon Alexa, and also on our channels on YouTube and Mixcloud. And coming up now here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series is our second interview for today and our final interview for this broadcast season with 19-year-old Greek-American fashion designer Despina Kotsis. The Dialogos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Dialogos Radio. Joining us today on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series for our final interview to close out the 2018-2019 broadcast season is an up-and-coming Greek-American fashion designer from New York, Despina Kotsis. She's with us, joining us from New York to tell us all about her work, her designs, and how already at age 19, she's making a name for herself in the world of fashion. So Despina, welcome to our program.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for having me. This is my first podcast, so I'm not going to lie. I'm a little nervous, but I'm extremely excited to be on the show. So thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you, and I think you'll do great, so don't worry about it. And to get us started, tell us a few words about your clothing line, what it consists of, and what inspired you to start a clothing line in the first place.
All right, so my clothing line name is Minx New York, and basically what it is, it's a streetwear line. It's all inspired by New York City. Ever since I was little, I extremely loved fashion, and growing up, I realized that streetwear was really popular, especially in this generation today. I got a sewing machine when I was younger, but I really wasn't good at sewing. I still had the passion for fashion, I guess you could say, so I didn't want to stop it. I did some more research, and as the time was going by, I was like, why not start a streetwear line? And then I just came up with the idea, and Minx New York, there you go.
All right, so Minx New York, how did you come up with the name Minx for your clothing line?
So I didn't want a name that was too long, and I also realized like a lot of like clothing line names, especially streetwear, they're particularly short. So basically what I did was I was on Google one day, and I just Googled like four-letter words that are short, and I found the word Minx, and I was like, oh, what does that mean? I like the name. So I Googled it, and Minx means a young, flirty, cunning woman. And I was like, oh, kind of sounds like me. So I decided to use that as my streetwear line and then just add New York because I'm from New York, and I got Minx New York.
Awesome. So your clothing line also has an interesting symbol, a pigeon, and there's a bit of a story behind this, if I'm not mistaken. So what does the pigeon symbolize?
All right. So because I'm from New York, the pigeon plays like a big role. They're everywhere in the city. And what I wanted to show through my clothing line using the bird as a symbol was that since they're everywhere in the city, kids especially, and even adults, we try to scare them. I remember scaring like the birds when I was little. And even though we're much bigger than the birds have the power to like spread their wings and fly anywhere they want. So what I wanted people to realize is that we're like the pigeon, and that we all have our own like set of wings. And if we spread them, we're able to live a life full of endless opportunities. What I wanted to really focus on, not only my designs, but give a positive message behind this clothing line. I really want not only young people, but even like my yayam papu, like I want to inspire people to live life to their fullest and to dream big, because we have the power to really do anything. So I want kids to get a good message out of this line and to chase their dreams, kind of like I am right now.
All right, so we're on the air with Greek-American fashion designer Despina Kotsis joining us from New York. And Despina, you mentioned before that your clothing line specializes in streetwear. And perhaps there's some that don't see this as being the most glamorous or chic thing in the world. So why did you end up choosing streetwear?
So I chose streetwear because, first of all, it's really popular today. And like I said, I wasn't really good with the sewing machine. I'm a type of girl that likes to chill in, like, I guess, sweatpants and a like t-shirt. And what easier way to incorporate fashion other than like a t-shirt? You could wear that anywhere. So that's kind of why I chose streetwear. I really like how my designs aren't like basic, I guess you could say, because a lot of streetwear lines today, they're just logos, and that's kind of not what I'm trying to focus on. I want my clothing line to be different, which is why I do all my designs myself and incorporate so many colors. Even though the shirt is like plain, I decide to go crazy on the design and give it color. And I really like believe that my streetwear is more different than the lines today.
So if you could describe your look in one word or maybe in one phrase, what would it be?
So personally, my look is edgy yet elegant. I don't really have a specific look. It's kind of like what I like to wear, like when I wake up, what I'm feeling. I kind of like to wear jackets such as like leather and jean. And then I love going heavy on accessories. I love rings and earrings and all that stuff.
So does your streetwear, do your designs target a particular demographic, a particular age group?
So my streetwear line, it's honestly for everybody, male, female. There's no specific age group, which is why I love it. It's honestly for everybody. Like I said, I could see my mom wearing my shirt, my little cousin, my papu, my yaya. It's kind of like for everybody. And I think that's really the main beauty of streetwear, because like I said, even though it's a regular t-shirt, you don't look at it as a regular t-shirt. It's more of like art, like it's edgy, it's street, like, you know, it's hip. So, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your inspirations. What or perhaps even who serve as your inspirations in creating your designs, and perhaps inspirations from the world of fashion or music or celebrity or so forth?
All right. So I'm really inspired by Lady Gaga, as well as Billie Eilish and Sia. When creating my designs, I focus mainly on like, I focus on not being basic, like I said. So when I'm designing, I like to play a lot of music, and that music is usually from Sia or Lady Gaga. Billie Eilish, like I said, also, she's a huge inspiration to me. Why these people are so inspiring to me is because, like I said, they're not basic. They like to go crazy with their style. Nobody tells them what to wear. I'm a huge fan of Lady Gaga and her meat dress, and Billie, she's a young pop star now. She's getting really big, and I love her clothing and her outfits and her style. Like, she doesn't care what anybody thinks, and I have the same mentality. I think that's really dope, so yeah.
So speaking of inspirations and celebrities, apparently you have received the support of some celebrities for your clothing line. Is that right?
Yes. So I've got a lot of support from Nia Vardalos. She's basically my second mother. I'm really thankful for her. When I first opened my store up online, she actually found my clothing. I believe I tagged her, and she was a huge fan of my designs. Later on, I was lucky enough to send her a shirt, and she's been helping me ever since. She's reposted a picture of her in my shirt. She's tweeted about my line. I've also gotten support from Alex and Francis at Teto Kumpo, as well as actor Jake T. Austin from Disney Channel. And honestly, it's only been a year for me, and I'm extremely blessed and grateful to have people like this supporting my line and my dream. This is awesome.
So we're on the air here on the Alagos Radio and the Alagos Interview Series with Greek-American fashion designer Despina Kotsis, speaking to us from New York. And Despina, social media is a big part of what you do. It's a big part of your clothing line. Tell us how you incorporate social media into your line and into everything that you do.
So social media has been a huge like role for me, especially with this clothing line, because that's how I spread the word. I started doing my own hashtags for my clothing line, hashtag Minx New York, hashtag Minx NYC, and that's how you build your audience. People have been recognizing my line from around the world, and I also do this thing called worldwide plugs. That's how I get people from around the world, different countries such as Greece and Italy, because I was lucky enough to travel to those places this year. I like to incorporate their culture along with my clothing line. So what I do is I build up on hashtags such as Minx Greece or Minx Italy, and the word just keeps spreading. So I am extremely blessed to have social media in this generation, because it's an extremely helpful tool to help me express my clothing and spread the word. And yeah.
So you brought Greece into the picture, and let's expand on that. You recently had the chance, from what I understand, to visit Greece for the first time. So tell us what that experience was like. And for those who are curious, which part of Greece are you from?
So I'm actually from three parts. I'm from Thessaloniki, Evia, and Chalkidiki. And I actually just went to Greece for the very first time ever with my university, St. John's University. It was an unforgettable experience. Everything was unreal. I'm very proud to call myself Greek American and to be representing the Greek community along this journey of mine. I will be going back with my family, so I'm extremely excited. But the support I have gained from the Greek community, I'm very blessed and I have no words. They really have been supporting me with this and I'm very thankful. So thank you guys.
And you've also produced a Minx Greece video from what I know. So tell us about the video.
Yes. So as I said, I do this thing called Worldwide Plugs, where I involve other countries in my clothing line. So while I went to Greece, I decided to do a Minx Greece video. And what I did was I brought my clothes to Greece and my models, I kind of used just regular kids from Greece. I strongly believe that there's no specific look to be a model. Everybody can be a model. That's why when I come out with a new design or a shirt, I just open the question up to anyone if they would like to model for me. So I found some kids in Greece, like locals, and I was like, oh, do you guys want to model for me? And they were like, sure. So what better way, you know, to get the locals too in the video? We created a video to capture Greece's beauty along with Minx New York. And we made a video and it was really fun. I got to meet the kids and it went up on YouTube. Nia Vardalos actually reposted that. And I've also gotten reposts from other celebrities and people, and it was awesome. So when I go back to Greece, I would love to make another one. And I think it's a good way to bring other cultures along with my clothing line, my dream, and also New York, because there's so much diversity and from New York and so many people. So it clicks.
So we are speaking here in the Alagos Radio and the Alagos interview series with Despina Kotsis, Greek-American fashion designer, the age of 19, already making a name for herself in the world of fashion and speaking to us today from New York. So Despina, continuing on the topic of Greece and looking at some of your future work, how might you like to involve Greece or any sort of Greek inspirations into your work going forward? And more broadly, what are your future plans for Minx?
So to involve Greece with my line, I've been designing already. I can't tell you what because it's a secret, but the new collection will be out hopefully in the fall. Involving Greece with my line, it's kind of like what I see inspires me. Once I get an idea, it just naturally flows. It's not something I should really think about. But going to Greece, I took a lot of pictures and videos. So I had a lot of things inspire me, from the architecture to even the food, the colors. So in the future, I'm honestly hoping for the best. I don't know what it's going to bring, but I'm hoping to finally go from an online store to an actual store. And I would love to open a store starting in New York and then going globally, Greece, Italy, anywhere. Like, that would be really awesome. So I'm hoping for the best.
Finally, before we wrap up, where can our listeners find you? You mentioned, of course, an online store as well. Where can I find out more about Minx and also your presence on social media?
So I have a website. It's called minxnewyork.com. If you guys want to search that up, whatever's left from the remaining collection should be online. And I also am heavy on Instagram. So if you want to search up Minx New York on Instagram, along with my personal Instagram, Des Coats, you guys could find me there. So that would be cool.
Awesome. Well, Vespina, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today here on the Alagos Radio and the Alagos interview series. It was a pleasure having you on and also to close out our broadcast season on this very interesting, very high note. And I wish you the best of luck with your work and efforts going forward. And hopefully we'll bring you back again in the future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. This was so dope. Really awesome. Thank you.
Follow the Alagos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/thealagosmedia and at twitter.com/thealagosmedia.
We just heard our final interview of the 2018-2019 broadcast season here on the Alagos Radio and the Dialogos interview series featuring 19-year-old Greek-American fashion designer Despina Kotsis, who joined us from New York. The audio of this interview will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, on our podcast, which is available in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Alexa, as well as other major podcast directories, and our channels on YouTube and Mixcloud. And with that, this broadcast season is ready to come to a close, and we expect a busy summer for Greece up ahead. We plan to be back with you again this fall to cover developments impacting Greece and the worldwide Greek community as well, and to bring you many more great interviews. So here's to a future for Greece that will hopefully be brighter than a present and brighter than a summer sun that we hope many of our listeners will have a chance to enjoy in Greece. Best wishes for a wonderful summer to all of you who have supported us once again this past season. For the Alagos Radio, this is Dr. Michael Nevradakis. Thanks for joining us.
Το καλοκαιράκι στην ακρογιαλιά μέσα στο νεράκι πλέουμε αγκαλιά. Πέφτει το βραδάκι, πιάνει η δροσιά. Δώσ' μου ένα φυλάκι και έλα πιο κοντά.
Εγώ κι εσύ, εσύ κι εγώ, μόνοι πάνω στη γη. Μόνοι στη γη. Εγώ κι εσύ, εσύ κι εγώ, μόνοι πάνω στη γη. Μόνοι στη γη. Ήταν η Αθήνα, όμως το λαιμό, με φως και ρουτίνα και άγχος τρομερό.
Δώσ' μου ένα τσιγάρο, δώσ' μου και φωτιά. Θεέ μου θα σε πάρω στην καυτή την αμμουδιά.
Εγώ κι εσύ, εσύ κι εγώ, μόνοι πάνω στη γη. Μόνοι στη γη. Εγώ κι εσύ, εσύ κι εγώ, μόνοι πάνω στη γη.